Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Welcome to episode 491 with my return guest, Ted Lide. I'm Paul Gilmartin. This is the Mental Illness Happy Hour, a place for honesty about all the battles in our heads, from medically diagnosed conditions, past traumas, and sexual dysfunction, to everyday compulsive negative thinking. This show's not meant to be a substitute for professional mental counseling. I'm not a therapist. It's not a doctor's office. It's more like a waiting room that doesn't suck. The website for this show is mentalpod.com, and you can fill out surveys there. You can shoot an email. You can browse the forum. You can do all kinds of things. Mentalpod, also the social media handle that you can follow us at. Now, you know, also at mentalpod.com, you can find ways to support the show financially, which is really important. We always, always, always need donors, whether it's via PayPal or Patreon or Zelle. All of those things help. I am going to dive right into today's episode. It's with my friend Ted Lide, and I think you're going to like it. And if you don't, go fuck yourself.
Every little thing feels like the end of the world.
The darkness came so quickly.
I was so fucking angry.
Make me as close to dead as possible.
And I felt so powerless.
Without the commitment.
If there's a word for it,
unbearable.
It means somebody else felt this way.
The feeling is so intense.
It is a lot more work.
I was frightened all the time.
To feed a child's emotional world.
Everyone feels pain.
Than it is their superficial world.
Everyone suffers.
My sexual addiction was the shame.
My mom ended up killing that woman in front of me and my brothers.
I had to feel that shame in order to feel the pleasure.
And I was being a dick to everybody.
We are social beings.
And the only way you're going to get it out is to cry.
We need to be with people.
I grabbed them by their throats and led them down to the floor and watched the breath leave their bodies.
Maybe well, listen, people... thanks for coming in.
I'm here with my friend and return guest, Ted Lide. We decided that we were going to do kind of a joint recording. He has a podcast as well. Tell him a little bit about your podcast.
You know, my podcast is called, what is it called? It's called Learning Not to Swear with Ted Lide. And I give Paul Gilmartin credit for being like the godfather of my podcast, because I did his podcast and it went pretty well, and he... Like I think after like a month, he called me and said, "I've gotten so much feedback from your podcast, from the episode you did of Mental Illness Happy Hour, and they either love you or hate you." And this is that's what he says. I've gotten like 50 emails, and they either love you or hate you. And you should probably do your own podcast. If you get people this upset, yes, you should probably get your own podcast.
One of the things that I love about you is that you are the least bullshitty person that I've ever met. And you are not afraid to upset somebody with your truth. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to have you back on, because oh, there's some shit going on. Yeah. And, you know, also you being a person of color, I wanted to get your take on things. We want to talk about the pandemic. You're recovering from cancer. You're on the waiting list for a kidney. So other than the pandemic, society falling apart, the earth roasting, financial hardship, and cancer, how are you?
You know, it's this has been a they took the kidney out in March, and then that's like just when the pandemic, you know, kind of hit the ground where everyone's saying, okay, now you can't go anywhere and don't talk to anybody. So I'd spent, you know, the first part of the year just preparing for that surgery to get the kidney dealt with, and then that happened, and then my kids all came home from school. My son, you know, was in high school, now he's at home, and my daughter was in college, and now she's back in the house, and my wife's been working from home, so there's all four of us and the dog are in the house. For 3 months now we've been in the house, and it's been really hard, not just because you're stuck in the house with your family and no one can go anywhere, but then you have the element of, you know, potential death if you go to the grocery store and you don't approach it the right way.
Mm-hmm.
And then
I am wearing a mask, by the way, right now. Ted has chosen not to wear one.
Yeah.
But we're about 4 feet apart.
My wife would be furious if she was here right now, but yes. I have trouble breathing, you know. Since the surgery anyway, it's hard for me to draw breath.
Yes.
So,
and by the way, nobody has, since the pandemic, nobody has been on the mic that you are on.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Well, good. So there's all of that. And then you add on this, you're all of a sudden racial strife becomes this thing that you just can't believe that it's still an issue after all this time.
Right. It's like, how do you upstage a pandemic?
Yeah. Yes, exactly. And why would you? What kind of mental illness do you have as a, you know, as a human being, or let alone as a cop, to say, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do something even more horrible and catastrophic than COVID-19. You know what I mean? And then something that essentially then drives people who are supposed to be social distancing,
it yeah.
compels them through outrage to gather.
Right. It really seems like the universe is pushing society to a breaking point.
Yeah.
And so the first time you saw the George Floyd video, what did you feel and what did you think?
The first thing I remember seeing it, and I'll never forget, I was just stunned, and I was in a trance until he started saying mama. When he said mama, I started crying. I was weeping right there watching this on my phone. And I could not believe, you know, what kind of man does this to another human being, to another man? And once any man hears another man calling for their mother, I mean, that's like the ultimate uncle. That's the ultimate I give. That's the ultimate tap out. And this guy heard him saying it and still...
Nothing.
Still nothing. And
and the other policemen standing there.
Yeah, and none of them felt obligated to walk over and shove him. Just give him a shove and say, hey, that's enough.
Or talk to him.
Yeah.
Say something to him.
Yeah. I was stunned by that, and then ultimately, the second time I watched it, I knew in my own heart that I'm the type of man that could not have stood by, and because there's guys talking to the cop, mm-hmm. bystanders talking and pleading with him to take action or to stop and change course, and he wouldn't. But I'm the type of guy who, after like, I couldn't have watched that for 8 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
By the second minute, I'd be under arrest or shot, or there's a scene in Do the Right Thing with Spike Lee where he gets the trash can and goes over and smashes a window. I'd have done something. I know me to know enough that I'd have done something to make myself the center of attention and hopefully distract this man enough to get off of this guy's neck.
And
I was just stunned that nobody had the courage or the mindset to take action.
I I think a lot of people have wondered that, but I personally, if I was in those people's shoes, I don't know what I would have done, because I wouldn't have known that he was going to die, and I would have been afraid of getting my ass kicked, getting my head broken open, and
yeah.
I can't imagine the guy that was saying bro, I can't imagine what he is going through, and the woman, anybody who was there,
yeah,
that, because we always second guess ourselves after something tragic happens. We always want to blame ourselves, and thank you for being honest about that.
As Black people, I think that we have reached a point, or we should have reached a point right now, where there should be a mob mentality in a situation like that, where you are a family member, and it's like, I'm not going to stand by and let anybody do that to my kid or anybody in my family and not make a move of some kind.
Right.
And so I don't care if there's three cops standing there flanking this guy. If we all move in on them, then they're going to have to shoot all of us. Then they're going to have to do whatever they're going to do. You have to tase all of us. You're going to have to do whatever you're going to do. Whatever horrible, whatever your next horrible move is, you're going to do it to all of us.
I get the feeling that as a society, we have moved closer to that.
We should be there.
Yeah, we should.
We should be there. It's like, listen, there's four of you. There's at least 8 or 12 of us, and you're going to shoot us all. Mm-hmm. But we're going to keep moving in on you until you get off of his neck.
One of the questions that I think is going through everybody's mind is, what is causing this epidemic? Why is this not going away? I mean, obviously racism has been here for 400 years, but in terms of how police continue to do this and continue to get away with it, and the seeming or actual lack of compassion and the sadism on the part of so many policemen, where does this come from? Did they come into the force that way? Did they come, you know, did did something break in them? What the fuck is going on? And I think until we can start to answer those questions, we won't know how to address it. There was a guy that who was an ex-cop, and he wrote an article anonymously about all of the horrible shit that he did and witnessed and stood by that happened. And the overall thing that he said was, they are taught almost from the beginning that your safety, the policeman's safety, comes first.
Paramount,
which on some level I can understand that they need to protect themselves to be able to function and do their job. But he said the other thing that was pounded into their heads was that this is, you do not talk about any other cop. And the way that they are trained is not to de-escalate things. And there was a lot of other things that he shared in this article. And it was really eye-opening, not in terms of the abuses that go on, but the extent to that he said. And he listed a Dead Sea Scrolls of abuses that were commonplace by all the police that he worked with.
Yeah, I believe that. I think that that's one of the problems, is there's this us or them mentality that has been adopted. And, you know, and you want to believe that it's just racial, but then there's a scene in Baltimore where they shoved that poor old man down and busted his head open and then marched past him. That was completely uncalled for. He wasn't posing a threat to them. Right. So one of them could not have, you know, taken him by the arm and guided him out of the path. Yeah, you're marching down the street, so you're in a path and you don't want your path disrupted. Right. But there's enough of you to get this guy out of the path and say, listen, you, if you don't want to get hurt, you need to stay over here.
So what is going through that police officer's mind when he is doing that? Is there something instinctively terrified? in him, that he is going on adrenaline and something has taken over him that's out of control? Or is he calmly and coolly and premeditatedly saying, this is my chance to fuck some people up?
I think it's probably a little bit of each, but mostly the disregard that says, you know, we are in charge. And you have no power.
You are against us.
You have no say. And you are, right. If you're in my way, you're against me. And right. If you had the common sense that you should have, you see us coming, you should, why aren't you out of the way? Right. I shouldn't have to tell you to get out of the way. Right. And you shouldn't expect me to treat you like a human being and guide you out of the way. So I'm going to put you on your ass. And that's the problem with policing now is that, as a black man, the minute that I'm stopped by the cops, I have two choices, to be confrontational or to be submissive. I feel like I should have the right to be confrontational if I feel like I'm being harassed or singled out for no reason. But if I want to not escalate and put this cop in a position where, no, you know, you're a threat to me. And that's all it takes. You see videos where just your being disagreeable mm-hmm. is enough to be for them to consider a threat. Yeah. Not that you've been hostile or violent, but just the fact that you're being disagreeable. Just if you say, why are you stopping me? Why did you stop me too many times? Then now I'm going to take this to a 12 when we could all keep it right here at a 4.
And speaking of 12, one of the things this cop shared in this article that he wrote was that there was a saying prevalent among he and his comrades that goes, I would rather be judged by 12 than carried by 6.
Yeah, that's a common, you know.
I had never heard that before.
Vigilante. You know, I grew up, I'm a Batman fan. I get, you know, being a badass and not wanting to, you know, okay. But to answer your original question, I think what it feels like to me now in my old age, in my many years, it feels like it's something that's in the blood. It feels like there's a type of person that becomes a cop. There's a type of person that doesn't become a cop. There's a type of person that wants to dominate. Mm-hmm. And there's a person that just wants to get on with their day. I think that the cops, what the cops have become is now something that attracts guys that want to dominate and feel good about dominating people. And not just black people, but why not black people? They're the easiest to dominate when you're a cop. So I think that there's something genetic about the breed of people that are drawn to that lifestyle. Mm. It feels genetic. It feels like there's something in the DNA of mankind, particularly white men. You know, you look at the history of America. There was a window where pilgrims or the settlers could have chosen to share this country. There was a window where they could have decided, okay, we're going to find a way to make peace with the Indians, and we're going to coexist, and we're not. But the dominant impulse was to drive them out and to dominate them and to. Mm-hmm. I believe that DNA still exists. I believe that there's a part of white men that skips a generation or moves through a bloodline that wants to drive out anybody that's different. And wants to crush anyone that opposes them.
You see it a lot in the business world where it's acceptable. Yeah. And, you know, I don't know if it's limited to race, but there is a predatory mentality that it's not what is the right thing to do, it's what can I get away with.
Well, I look out on that hillside and I see, you know, buffalo, and I see Indians, and I see a settlement, a tribe of people who, but then I don't see them as people or people who deserve to be there. I see their land and what I can mm-hmm. do with it and why I want it. And you know, and so it becomes about, that's what it's about. It's about dominating that thing. Mm-hmm. So I believe that there's just something in the bloodline. I don't know if there's a way to cure it. a way to seize it and pull it out. But that's how it feels to me. It feels like there's just this right. organic thing that some cats, you know, I'm sorry, I just...
Well, that's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you, because I knew you wouldn't polish it up before you served it to me, you know, that you would talk straightforward about what it is that you think and you feel. And I'm sure some people who are white would be like, you know, how dare he, you know, say that, you know, I'm this or I'm that. I've never harmed anybody. But I think I think everybody's got to be reflecting on what it is, whether you're taking action that's hurting people or just doing nothing.
Disregard is disregard. And that's the kernel of all of it. It's so the question is, to what degree do you carry, you know, what degree of black belt are you in disregarding? Are you first degree disregarder? Because that's what it boils down to. You know, white people are finally starting to say this racism is a problem that we have to fix. And it's true. It's more of a problem that white people need to fix, because they're the ones that are killing everyone. There's so many more killings. I won't say everyone. Black people just don't sit off and kill white people. I'm not going to say that. But what I am going to say is that you find more cases in the news throughout history where black people have been lynched and dragged out of their homes or shot in their homes or in their cars than white people. If black people were killing white people at the rate that whites are killing blacks, there'd be gun laws. There would mm-hmm. If black people were shooting white folks the way they're getting shot, there'd be gun laws. There'd be changes in the gun laws.
I also think you would see an occupation. I think you would see a military state, you know, like you see in Israel and the Palestinian territories. I think you would see something along those lines. You know, we love the Constitution until we think someone's going to take our stuff.
Yeah. And Donald Trump has proven that we don't really love our Constitution as much as we pretend we do either. Donald right. Trump has driven that fact home.
Yeah.
That the Constitution is just it's like a, you know, a to-do list. And either you'll get to it or you don't. Either you believe it or you don't.
So how do you talk to your kids about what's going on?
You know, my children are mixed. My wife is Irish, and so my children are biracial. And, you know, my son has special needs, and so we don't really talk much about racism with him. You know, we did talk to him about the virus and staying safe and wearing his mask. He's real good about wearing his mask when he's out in public, and he asks everybody that he meets if they're sick. He does sign language, and he's nonverbal, but he does some sign language, and he'll ask people if they're sick. And but as far as racism goes, we don't really cover that with him. He's the type of kid who's gonna need a caregiver his whole life, so I think he'll be in good hands for the most part, as far as not having to deal face to face with racism. My daughter is mixed, and she's very sensitive, very smart young woman. And, you know, we don't really talk about it either, because she's lived with it. She's lived with it from both sides already in her young life. She's only 18 now, but, you know, she, being very fair skinned, she's dealt with discrimination from black girls who, you know, don't want to be friends with her because she's white. They see a white girl, and then she's had white people in her life that have been made comments about, they forget that she's black, and they make comments that are hurtful. So she's plugged in, and, you know, she's very liberal and very, you know, woke. And so, you know, I don't know. It's mind-boggling for me, because it's not a place I thought I would ever be. You mm-hmm. know, when I married a white woman, when I was a young man and optimistic, I thought by the time I had kids and by the time I was an old man, this would, you know, we'd all have jetpacks, and my skin color wouldn't matter anymore.
We'd be protesting with our jetpacks.
Right. And the least of anyone's concern would be that I'm a black guy.
Do the protests give you any glimmer of hope? that change might happen?
Yes and no. I mean, you know, people, I've had a few conversations about this. The looting and the rioting is normally, has in the past, has always been something that I've been against and felt bad about, kind of embarrassed by, but not anymore. Not anymore. I don't care anymore. Looting is not desirable, and I don't do it. But
it doesn't upset you like it used to.
No, I feel like to me, that's the thing. The bar has been set. The bar has been set for what's fucked up. Standing on someone's neck is the fucking pinnacle of fucked upness. So I don't care if your store got burned down. I don't care. You want to not have your shit burned down? You want to not have these things, these horrible things happening in your neighborhood and being afraid of, you know, floods of people protesting in the street? Well, then you got to find a way to fix the racism and stop acting like it's okay for you to do whatever the fuck you feel like doing. You don't want me to do whatever the fuck I feel like doing, which is burning this son of a bitch down? You don't want me to do what I feel like doing. But guess what? I only feel like doing what I feel like doing because you feel like you can do whatever you want to do, which is stand on my neck.
So or stand by.
Yeah, or stand by and, fly your flag of disregard.
Speaking of standing by, what would you say if you could be in the room with those police officers that stood by while George Floyd died? Or the other guy, Chauvin.
The one question I would want to ask is he was cuffed. He was cuffed and face down on the pavement. So what is the significance of choking out someone? How big of a coward are you that you still find this man to be some sort of threat to you when he's face down on the pavement with his hand cut? He can't even get up.
And you have a gun.
And a taser, and he can't get up. If you get off of him, he can't get up because he's like a snail with no arms to stand up. So he's going to have to roll around to try to get to his knees. You are a complete advantage. Why do you feel compelled to cut off his ear? What threat are you trying to avoid by cutting off his ear? It's a complete bitch move.
What do you think they would say?
They would say what you were saying before. My safety is the most important thing. I'm like, how much more safety is required for you than him being face down? Him being unconscious is the ultimate safety for me.
You know what I think they would say? This is how we were trained. I think that's going to be the defense in the trial.
And I
of
would
those
say, you know what,
ones.
Nobody has trained you to stand on someone's neck for 8 minutes.
Right.
Nobody has said, and after you get to that fifth minute, your knees are going to start to cramp up, so you're going to want to try to, juggle your weight a little bit on his throat, because that's the tough time for you, is that crossing that fifth minute.
Yeah.
Get the fuck out of here. Bullshit.
Do you have any advice for people who aren't of color, like me, how we can be better advocates?
No, I may have in the past felt I could answer that, but now since I feel like it's a genetic, just like, genetically, I'm predisposed to diabetes and hypertension, which is what has damaged my kidneys. So this, that means my mother and my father, they had some variation of diabetes and hypertension. And so there's something genetic that is causing this, in my opinion, and how it feels to me. So what can any word say? It's like you talking to me about my diabetes. So that you don't have diabetes. You don't have these ailments. So what words can you possibly say that will heal me and my issue that I have to do the maintenance and do the therapies to fix myself. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I feel now. I feel like it's something that I can't address other than to say you need to be aware and you should be trying to do something better, because the outcome for you is destruction from me. I am not going to sit here quietly and let this happen without burning your shit now. And that's to me, that's a fair trade. It's, you know, the phrase "no justice, no peace" has always been out there, but I think we're reaching a point now where we're about to show you, okay, well, this is what this means.
Right.
This is what it means. No justice, no peace without any actual consequence. Mm-hmm. And that's been the problem, is that there's no consequence. You know, Michael Brown, Trayvon Martin, Tamir Rice. If there's no consequence, then of course there's, you know, how can I say there's no justice, no peace when my no peace doesn't have any teeth?
And sadly, the only way you're going to get some people's attention is through their wallet. It's certainly in a capitalistic society that has seemingly no restraints on it.
I believe that's true. I believe what white men don't want is their shit burnt down.
And I do not enjoy seeing people loot. I am not pro looting at all.
Neither am I. But I got no problem with it if the exchange is my life. I got no problem with it if it's the exchange of a man's life taken on basically in prime time in broad daylight with no consequences and no remorse, or no, there's no that glimmer in his eye that says maybe I'm going too far.
And you know what I think was important too is that it happened in a northern city. I think that especially woke people up, because if this had happened in the South, I think a lot of people north of the Mason-Dixon line would have said this is a Southern thing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's also, you know, kind of scary. It's that, yeah, that illusion of, you know, we're at least we're not in Alabama, or at least we're not dealing mm-hmm. with Georgia. The fact that you realize, well, Minnesota is, you know, is Georgia North. Is Alabama North?
Let's take a break right here and give some love to our sponsors. Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp.com online counseling. If you have never tried online counseling, you should absolutely give it a shot. And they now serve people who are under 18. It requires parental consent, but once consent is acquired, the relationship between the youth, is that what you would call them, and the counselor is private. So go to betterhelp.com/mental. Make sure you include the /mental part so they know that you came from this podcast. And then just fill out a questionnaire and they'll match you up with a betterhelp.com counselor. And if you are under 18, they'll send you to teencounseling.com and get the ball rolling on getting consent from your parents and finding a counselor and all that good stuff. And the process satisfies all the legal requirements in all 50 states, and they have 600 plus counselors who are focused on working with teens. So again, betterhelp.com/mental.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Well, let's talk about some fun things. Let's talk about the pandemic. Let's brighten things up a bit. Let's talk about the virus that is ravaging our planet.
Yeah.
What have been the most common thoughts and feelings that you have had since the quarantine?
The fact that what is bad now doesn't seem to be bad anymore. This is a tremendous failing. Obama tried to give us health care, and they acted like it was the Republicans in particular acted like they're so much more offended by the attempt at health care, the Affordable Health Care Act, than they are about the pandemic.
Yeah.
So we have something that is a push through by a Democrat to try to give people affordable health care. And they're, oh, no, it's going to ruin America. It'll never work. It'll never work. He's trying to ruin America. Mm-hmm. Then you have something that's killed over 100,000. Were we at 100,000 deaths yet?
I'm not sure.
I think we're easily at 100,000 deaths by this point from coronavirus, and not a peep. No, it's somehow it's not as bad as him trying to get health care. It just is upside down. It makes no sense. The fact that Trump can campaign with his head held high when there's this many more deaths on American soil, they said, than the Vietnam War.
Ted, I want my freedom returned to me. I want my right to be able to be declined for a pre-existing condition. I want that freedom back.
You should have it back.
To die in poverty.
I think the thing that's been the most mind-boggling thing for me is that, like I said, is that so this is not a failure anymore. They've redefined what failure is, and to me, it's just if they can convince the world or America that failure is no longer failure. Mm. Then we're in trouble.
I think one of the things that I would really love to see change is I would love, and I have a lot of problems with the Democratic Party. I usually vote Democratic because they're a better alternative in my mind than the Republican Party, but they are weak, corrupt. I could go on and on. And no. One of the things that really pisses me off is that they have allowed the Republicans to make socialism a bad word.
Yeah.
To make compassion and caring for the people in your village, like we did for 10,000 years. We took care of each other. And they have made that into a bad thing. No. Democrats should be saying, yes, I'm a socialist. Yes, I care about my fellow man. And we can afford... We can afford to help the people who are neediest. No, do you need five fucking summer homes?
Nobody brands their agenda the way the Republicans do. And that's one of their strengths, is that they are able to sell turds and not lie about it being a turd.
Yeah.
And still sell it.
Yeah. And the Democrats think the way is to sell dingleberries.
Yeah. But to try to convince you that it's not a dingleberry, listen, the tax reform, there was no reason for it. There was no way to justify it in the eyes of the working class. And yet they sold it, and he didn't get any kind of backlash or any kind of blowback from his own fans who are poor people. It's amazing.
Yeah. One of the positive things about our current political lack of choice is that I'm less afraid to die. I'm less afraid of death. I truly am. There are days when I think if I died in my sleep, I don't want to suffer, but,
You know what? I agree with that, except I just don't want to die while that bastard is... I don't want to die while he's president. I think that, to me, that's like... He really wins if I die while he's still in the White House. that he beat me. He beat it's a personal beating, man. I gotta at least live
long
enough.
Outlast him.
I gotta live long enough to see him go.
Have there been any healthy coping mechanisms that you've relied on during the quarantine, or during the?
I don't watch. I stopped watching very much news. I don't watch very much news at all anymore. I used to wake up and watch scan the news in the morning, watch the Today Show, CBS This Morning, just flip around and catch all the headlines. I don't do that anymore. I've been watching sitcoms and movies and, just trying to create a little firewall between myself and something I seem to have no control over and that doesn't seem to make any sense to me.
Yeah.
I think that it's unhealthy to submerge yourself in something that is that toxic, which is just basically outdoors now.
Right, and I don't think that we need to submerge ourselves to stay informed. I think there's a way to kind of titrate the amount of information that we're taking in, especially because all the media outlets are, they're either outright criminal in the lies they spread, or they're just plain lazy.
Yes. CBS This Morning with Gayle King and what they do at the top of their show every morning is, this is your world in 90 seconds. And they do like at 7 o'clock, they do your world in 90 seconds. And I usually, if I don't catch it, then I, DVR that and I catch that, and then they'll tell you and maybe I'll watch, to see if there's something interesting. But that 90 seconds is usually, that's enough for me to feel like, okay, I'm good. I have a glimpse. I have a thumbnail.
So have there been any ways that are unhealthy that you've been coping, that you're comfortable sharing about?
Trying to eat right has been hard. I feel compelled to eat cheeseburgers every day. I just feel like comfort food every day. I found out that Wendy's is apparently giving a bunch of money to Trump, which is like my favorite burger was the Wendy's. And so now I feel, that's depressing. The number of all the burgers I love the most, this is, you bastards. You bastards. Every $4 I spend on a combo, now how much of that goes to that bonehead? Just trying to eat right, get out and walk. My family walks every day. We walk. My wife is really good about making us all walk. And, I don't know, man. This is just not, I'm approaching the final chapters of my years. And this is not at all what I thought. Any of it would be like.
Yeah.
The fact that a man could let a pandemic hit American soil and ignore it for 30 days or 45 days that he ignored it and still get to run for president again and everyone be just pretend that that didn't happen or that doesn't mean that your safety and your well-being is not clearly not a priority to him, and yet you want to tell me that he should stay.
Have you had any moments during the quarantine that were oddly beautiful or made you laugh or smile or, warmed your soul?
Having my kids in the house, it's a mixed bag because you feel horrible for them that they're my son misses his school and his classmates. He's special needs, so he does not have the... my daughter can go up into her room and Zoom and FaceTime and talk on the phone with her friends and kind of have a network of people. He doesn't really have that kind of a peer group that he can communicate with that way. So he's isolated. And then my daughter's, again, she's isolated too in her own way. This is not the way youth is supposed to be spent under house arrest. So it's a mixed bag in that. At the same time, it's great to have them in the house and it's great to have their company, and they've been really good natured and good spirited about it. And talking to my daughter and watching movies with her, I always try to record at least one movie to watch with her. that, you know, something that she hasn't seen. And, you know, so that's been the best part, is getting this bond, extra bonding time with my kids. And my wife, too, I guess. I just figured she might be listening. So, and of course, my beautiful wife Jamie, yeah, who was always there.
She is awesome. I love Jamie. Well, dude, thanks for schlepping over the hill to come do this with me.
Yeah, Paul had some technical difficulty getting his computer to work.
That's an understatement.
And so he just kept apologizing and coming out to see if I was okay. And I was laying on the sofa. And I told him, man, I've been cooped up in my house for 3 months with my kids. This is like Hawaii right now. I might go back and sit on your. I might sit on your sofa another hour. This has been so cool.
Well, good, man. I love you, buddy.
I love you too, man.
I hope you guys enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. And of course, it's always good to see Ted. I don't have any surveys today. It's been kind of a crazy week. I had a little bit of a meltdown I think I shared a week ago or maybe even 2 weeks ago. I'm on a different dosage of one of my meds, and it's a little bit of a roller coaster ride. The depression kind of comes and goes, and when it does, is just all I want to do is be in bed. And so everything has been feeling pretty Herculean. So there you have it. I hope you guys got something out of our episode. And if you're out there and you're feeling stuck, just never forget that you are not alone. And thanks for listening.
Everybody I know is bizarrely beautifully fucked up in some weird way.